When a Boeing 737 goes down, investigators spend like months sifting through the
Oh,
wreckage.
absolutely. Every single piece.
Right. They're looking for faulty sensors or software glitches or even just like a single miscommunication from air traffic control.
Yeah, they leave no stone unturned.
But when a car leaves a suburban road and hits a tree, we almost instantly just blame the driver. We assume they were texting or, fell asleep or just lost focus.
We really do. And that assumption is, honestly, one of the most dangerous blind spots we have as a society.
Seriously.
A blind spot.
Yeah, totally. Because we treat these thousands of pounds of metal we drive every day as infallible. And we act like the environment we drive through is completely static.
Which, I mean, it obviously isn't.
Exactly. In reality, neither of those things is true. The mechanics of a crash are incredibly complex, and just assuming driver error allows these massive systemic failures to go completely unnoticed.
Which is exactly what we're dissecting today on this deep dive.
Yes, we're getting right into the hidden mechanics of it all.
We are. We're taking a hard look at a recent, really tragic local crash that highlights the hidden complexities of roadway safety right here in the New York area.
It's an area that throws a lot at you as a driver.
For sure. And to really understand the mechanics of what happens after a crash, we're looking through the lens of actual case files and forensic strategies from the law offices of Norman Gershon.
Right, which gives us an incredible perspective.
It really does. So the mission today is to break down exactly how these unseen variables cause catastrophic accidents and provide you, the listener, with a highly specific playbook for protecting yourself if the unthinkable happens.
And it is a vital playbook to have because the driving landscape we navigate in this region is honestly deeply unforgiving.
Okay, let's unpack this with a real example. Let's ground this in reality.
Good idea.
So on the morning of May 14th, a single vehicle crash occurred in northern Westchester. According to the New York State Police, an 85-year-old resident of Summers was driving along West Hill Drive near Warren Street.
Right, a fairly standard local road.
Yeah. But for reasons that are still under investigation, the vehicle just left the roadway and struck a tree. The driver, who was the only person in the car, was tragically pronounced dead at the scene.
It's just a devastating event for the community. And, while investigators are still piecing together the timeline of that specific morning, this type of crash represents a massive daily hazard for all of us.
Because of the roads themselves?
Yes, because drivers in this area are constantly transitioning between incredibly diverse environments. I mean, think
Yeah,
about it.
going from local streets to the highway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have the narrow, winding, tree-lined roads of suburban and rural northern Westchester, where the margins for error are virtually non-existent.
Oh, absolutely. No shoulder at all.
Right. And then mere minutes later, you're merging onto these high-speed, heavily congested arteries like I-287 or the Hutchinson River Parkway, the Bronx River Parkway, or the Taconic.
Okay, I have to push back a little here,
So
though.
go ahead.
If a car goes off West Hill Drive into a tree, and there are absolutely no other cars around. I mean, it's really hard not to jump to driver error. What else could it literally be?
I completely understand why it looks that way on the surface. What's fascinating here is what you find when you look at the forensic realities.
Okay, what do the forensics show?
Well, the contributing factors in a single car crash are rarely binary. First, you have sudden medical emergencies. And we're not just talking about massive heart attacks here.
What else than like a stroke?
Yeah, or even less obvious things. A driver can experience a microseizure, a sudden drop in blood pressure, or a minor stroke that incapacitates them for just like 3 seconds.
3 seconds? That's nothing.
It sounds like nothing, but at 45 miles per hour, 3 seconds means you've traveled nearly 200 feet completely blind.
Wow. Okay, so in 200 feet, you're off the road and into a tree before you even realize what's happening to your own body.
Exactly. Then you have to look at the infrastructure itself. Poor drainage is a massive issue around here.
Like water pooling on the roads.
Yes. Municipalities sometimes fail to maintain proper grading on a curve, which leads to a thin sheet of water pooling exactly where a driver needs traction the most.
And then you hydroplane.
Right. Hydroplaning occurs, the car glides, and suddenly the driver becomes a passenger in their own vehicle. Add to that degraded asphalt or missing warning signs.
Oh, or those overgrown branches blocking the signs.
Exactly. Sightlines get completely obstructed by overgrown vegetation, where a driver literally cannot see that a curve is tightening until they're already in it.
Wait, so what about the car itself? When you mentioned the airplane analogy earlier, you talked about faulty sensors. Do cars just break down mid-drive?
Far more often than the public realizes. you have catastrophic mechanical failures that leave zero physical evidence unless you know exactly what to look for.
Like what? What kind of failure?
Well, a tie rod snaps, causing the steering column to completely detach from the front wheels. Or a brake line ruptures.
That's terrifying.
Or a tire experiences a rapid deflation blowout that doesn't just make the car bump. It violently yanks the steering wheel right out of the driver's hands.
And, I mean, on a wide-open interstate in Kansas, maybe you just drift into a grassy median and catch your breath. But around here...
Exactly. In northern Westchester, the environment is the deciding factor between a terrifying close call and a fatality.
Because there's nowhere to go.
Right. You're surrounded by massive, ancient oak trees right on the edge of the pavement. Heavy steel guardrails, incredibly sharp curves, and zero shoulders.
Right. If a mechanical glitch or a medical issue happens on the Taconic, the environment just turns it into a catastrophic collision instantly.
Precisely. It's an unforgiving landscape.
Okay. This brings up a massive question for me. If a crash is caused by a tie rod snapping or terrible road drainage, how does anyone actually prove that?
It's incredibly difficult.
Especially if the driver is severely injured, or like in the Summers case, tragically deceased. How do you know the tie rod didn't just break because the car hit the tree?
That right there is the pivotal challenge of forensic crash reconstruction. And it's why the window to find the truth is so incredibly small.
Because the evidence disappears.
Yes. Right after a catastrophic crash, evidence begins to rapidly degrade and disappear.
But how exactly does it disappear? Evidence isn't just, you know, evaporating into thin air.
In a modern vehicle, it practically does. Most people don't realize their car has what is essentially a black box.
Wait, like an airplane?
Exactly like that. It's called an event data recorder, or EDR. It captures the crucial 5 seconds before the airbags deploy.
So it tracks what the car was doing?
Yeah, exactly how fast the car was going, whether the brakes were applied, the precise angle of the steering wheel, and the throttle position.
Wait, so the car actually knows if you were trying to brake or if the system failed?
Yes. But here's the catch. Unlike an airplane black box that's designed to survive at the bottom of the ocean, a car's EDR is highly volatile.
Volatile how? Like it deletes itself?
Kind of. See, the car gets towed to a salvage yard, and an attendant turns the ignition key just to roll up the windows to keep the rain out.
Okay, yeah. Makes sense.
That simple act of cycling the ignition can overwrite the crash data. It's just gone forever.
You've got to be kidding me. Rolling up a window can destroy the entire case.
Precisely. And it's not just the digital data. Surveillance footage from a nearby house's Ring camera might overwrite itself every 24 hours.
Oh, right, because those loop continuously.
Exactly. Physical roadway evidence, like faint skid marks, which prove whether a driver tried to stop or hydroplane, they get washed away by the next morning's rain.
So the scene literally washes away.
Yes. And the mechanical integrity of the car itself is compromised if a proper legal hold isn't placed on the vehicle before it gets scrapped.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, and honestly, deeply uncomfortable to talk about.
Yeah, the aftermath is grim.
Because while a family is in the ICU or, you know, making funeral arrangements and just completely drowning in shock and grief, there is this massive corporate apparatus that is already wide awake and moving against them.
You're talking about the insurance machine.
Yes, the insurance machine. And I want to use that term carefully because it really is a machine.
It operates like one, without question.
It's not a malicious group of cartoon villains, but it is a highly organized triage center designed to do one thing, sever liabilities. While the family is crying, the insurance company has rapid response teams already analyzing the crash site.
That is exactly how you have to view it. They are mobilizing from minute one. They're sending investigators to photograph the scene, looking for any angle to prove the driver was at fault.
That they don't want to pay.
Right. Their entire business model relies on minimizing payouts. So they're actively gathering the very evidence that's disappearing. And they're doing it solely to build a defense against the victim.
It's a completely uneven playing field. You have a grieving, overwhelmed family on one side and a multi-billion dollar corporation with unlimited resources on the other.
It really is David versus Goliath.
So how do you even begin to fight back? If the MTA or an insurance conglomerate is already steps ahead of you, what is the equalizer?
This raises an important question because the only equalizer in that scenario is specialized, aggressive legal firepower.
Someone who knows the system.
Exactly. You need someone who understands exactly how to stop the clock on that disappearing evidence. When we look at the case files from the law offices of Norman Gershon, you see exactly how this asymmetric war is fought and won.
Let's dig into that, because his name comes up constantly in these complex cases across Westchester County, White Plains, Yonkers, the Bronx, Manhattan, and really the greater NYC area.
He's incredibly well known in the region.
Right. And what really caught my eye is that Norman Gershon is the lawyer that other attorneys call when they hit a wall.
And that is the absolute highest compliment in the legal field.
Why is that?
When a lawyer has a case where the insurance company is refusing to budge, or the forensic data is just incredibly complex, they bring him in to try the case.
So he's the heavy hitter.
Exactly. He has over 35 years of experience, entirely dedicated to representing accident victims and grieving families. Insurance companies know him. They know he's fully prepared to take a case to a jury. And frankly, they fear him.
And this is crucial for anyone listening who might find themselves completely overwhelmed. There is no financial barrier to getting this level of representation. Clients only pay if they win.
Which is huge for a family in crisis.
Absolutely huge. I want to give the direct line right now because we're going to get into how these cases are actually won, and it is vital information. The number is 914-485-1444.
Definitely write that down.
Let me say it again. 914-485-1444.
Having that number is important because in the legal world, reputation is nice, but results are what actually force a massive corporation to write a check.
Yeah.
You need the receipts.
Well, I'm looking at these case files right now, and the receipts are staggering. But I need you to explain this to me.
Sure. What are you looking at?
There is a $16.5 million verdict in Betancourt v. NYCTA. There's a $14.5 million settlement in Lynn v. Metropolitan Transit Authority. How do you beat a city infrastructure?
It's not easy.
I mean, going up against the MTA sounds like an impossible situation.
It is the ultimate David versus Goliath battle. The MTA has an army of defense attorneys and virtually unlimited resources to bury a plaintiff in paperwork and procedural delays.
So how do you win?
To secure a $16.5 million or a $14.5 million result, you don't just show up and argue. You have to aggressively out-prepare the city.
Out-prepare them how?
You immediately subpoena the maintenance records. You depose their municipal engineers. You secure that EDR data we talked about before it's wiped. And you bring in world-class accident reconstructionists to build a narrative that is scientifically bulletproof.
So you're basically boxing them in with undeniable physics and data until they have absolutely no choice but to concede.
Exactly. You leave them no room to spin it. And you see this strategy replicated across his other major victories, too.
Like what else?
Well, there's a $5.445 million verdict in Mungo v. Treviseo, a $5.068 million verdict in Young v. Bell and Nissan Lyft of NY, and a $2.5 million verdict in the Westchester Supreme Court in Yurkovich v. Sapin.
Those are massive numbers.
They are. These are complex, hard-fought battles where the defense tried everything they could to shift the blame, and they just failed.
And yet, you know, when you read what the actual clients say about Norman Gershon, it isn't just about the money.
No, it's about the advocacy.
Right. One client described him as a brilliant attorney, a beast in the courtroom. Another noted that he is highly competent, focused, well-prepared, and a real fighter.
Which is exactly what you want when you're going up against a machine.
Totally. It seems like his real skill is acting as a human shield for people going through the absolute worst trauma of their lives.
That is the very definition of advocacy. When you're exposed and vulnerable, you need a fortress around you.
Okay, let's put this into practice. We know the variables are complex. We know the evidence is disappearing quickly. And we know the insurance machine is hunting for a way to deny liability.
Absolutely.
So what does this all mean? If I'm listening to this right now, and God forbid I'm in a severe collision on the Hutchinson tomorrow, what are the exact steps I need to take? Walk us through the survival playbook.
Okay. There's a very specific 5-step protocol you must follow immediately after a crash.
Got my pen ready.
Step 1, call emergency services immediately. You need the police on the scene to secure the area, divert traffic, and officially document the initial environment before things are moved.
Got it. Call 911 right away.
Step 2, seek medical attention as soon as possible. And this is critical, even if you feel completely fine.
Wait, if I'm standing on the shoulder of the highway, my car is dented, but I feel totally fine, why do I need an ambulance?
Because you don't actually know how you feel.
What do you mean?
When you're in a collision, your endocrine system floods your body with adrenaline and cortisol. It's a biological survival mechanism that acts as a massive painkiller.
Oh, like fight or flight.
Exactly. You might have severe micro tears in your cervical spine or internal bleeding, but in that moment, your brain is just blocking the pain signals.
So If the cop asks if I need an ambulance and I say, no, I'm okay, what happens?
You just handed the insurance company the weapon they will use to destroy your case.
Really? Just by saying I'm okay?
Yes. They will pull the police report, see that you declined medical attention, and when you wake up 2 days later in agonizing pain from severe whiplash, they'll argue that your injuries didn't happen in the crash.
Oh, wow. They'll say something else caused it?
Yep. They'll say you must have hurt your neck at the gym the next day. You need a medical record established instantly while you were still at the scene.
Wow. I never thought about it like that. It's literally your own biology working against your legal case. Okay, what is step three?
Step three. Document the accident scene yourself, but only if it's physically safe to do so.
So take pictures with my phone.
Exactly. Take wide photos of the vehicles, zoom in on the tire marks on the road, photograph the weather conditions, and get pictures of where your car ended up relative to the roadway.
Capture it all before it changes.
Capture the environment before the tow trucks arrive and change the scene entirely.
Okay, take photos of everything. And step four.
If we connect this to the bigger picture we discussed earlier, step four is perhaps the most dangerous trap. Avoid giving any detailed recorded statements to the insurance company.
Break this down for me. Why is a recorded statement so dangerous? If I'm telling the truth, shouldn't I just tell them what happened?
Because you're not having a casual conversation. Insurance adjusters are highly trained interrogators.
They act so nice on the phone, though.
Of course they do. They know you're shaken up, and they will use psychological tactics to get you to inadvertently accept fault. They'll ask leading questions in a very friendly, sympathetic tone.
Give me an example.
They'll say something like, wow, it sounded like it was raining pretty hard out there. You probably couldn't see perfectly, right?
And I would probably say, yeah, I guess it was a little hard to see.
Boom. You just gave them a recorded admission that you were driving too fast for the weather conditions.
Oh, my God.
Or they'll ask, when did you first notice the other car? And if you hesitate and say, I'm not exactly sure, they will argue you were distracted.
That's sneaky.
Very. They are fishing for sound bites to shift the blame away from mechanical failures or hazardous roads and place it squarely on your shoulders.
That is terrifying. It's like an interrogation where you don't even realize you are a suspect.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Which leads directly into step five. Speak with an experienced personal injury attorney quickly.
Let them handle the interrogators.
Exactly. You take that burden of communication and you hand it entirely over to someone who knows how to deflect those tactics.
You hand it to the person who knows how the machine works. We have really journeyed through a completely different reality today.
It's an eye-opening reality, isn't it?
It really is. We started with the tragic reality of that single crash in Summers, and we peeled back the layers to see just how hazardous the roads across Westchester and NYC truly are.
So many hidden dangers out there.
Yeah, and we completely shattered the illusion that every car hitting a tree is just a distracted driver. We revealed the complex mechanical failures, medical emergencies, and infrastructure traps that are just invisible to the naked eye.
And we also uncovered the grim reality of forensic evidence.
Right, how quickly a crucial black box can be wiped out just by rolling up a window.
Yeah, and how rapidly the insurance industry mobilizes to protect its own profits while a family is at their absolute most vulnerable.
And the most importantly, we mapped out exactly how to fight back. Knowing that your own adrenaline can mask injuries, knowing that friendly insurance questions are actually traps, and knowing that you need a trial-tested advocate in your corner, it changes everything.
It's the difference between being a victim and being protected.
Exactly. The law offices of Norman Gershon represents that equalizer. The decades of experience, the massive multi-million dollar verdicts against giants like the MTA, and the reputation as a fierce protector for grieving families, that is the firepower you need.
It really is.
Again, the number to call if you ever find yourself in this situation is 914-485-4444. Save it in your phone, 945-4424. It costs absolutely nothing to have them in your corner because they only get paid if they win.
And, you know, I'd leave you with this. Think about your next drive down the Taconic or I-287.
We do it every day.
Right. We treat these commutes as totally routine.
Yeah.
But you are operating a complex machine in a deeply unpredictable environment.
That is so true.
If our safety is constantly dictated by invisible factors, from municipal drainage issues to an electronic sensor failing in a split second, how much absolute control do we really have behind the wheel?
Probably a lot less than we think.
Exactly. And more importantly, if the unthinkable happens and that illusion of control shatters, is your first instinct going to be trusting the system to be fair? Or immediately building your fortress?